Leaders of Congress came up with a budget deal last night, and that allows everybody to focus on the coming election, and maybe at some point all the other business piled up. Lawmakers have been trying to agree for years on a rewrite of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which is a big deal. It gives federal help to schools serving low-income students. It was signed into law back in 1965 by President Lyndon Johnson.
It represents a major new commitment of the federal government to quality and equality in the schooling that we offer our young people.
The law was supposed to be updated every few years, but it's not been rewritten since 2001, when another Texan, President George W. Bush, renamed it No Child Left Behind.
We're going to spend more money, more resources, but they'll be directed at methods that work, not feel-good methods, not sound-good methods, but methods that actually work.
Those methods included a sweeping new federal system of testing and accountability, a system that was bipartisan and strict and increasingly controversial. The law made clear that schools that fail to meet high standards should be fixed or closed. Many teachers and parents came to loathe this law, which technically expired in 2007, but it's on the books until it's replaced. So the challenge for lawmakers is figuring out which, if any, of Bush's tough love methods worked. And this week, our education team is doing the same. Here to start things off is NPR's Corey Turner.
The whole reason for all of that tough love was the perception that states weren't doing enough to fix their failing schools. So the law created a new role for the federal government: tough guy. Right now, though, the House and Senate, while they don't agree on much, they do agree on this. The tough guy routine, it didn't work.
It was never intended to be a miracle cure-all.
Tom Ahn teaches at the University of Kentucky, and he thinks the law, like the classic tough guy, is a little misunderstood.
NCLB is usually regarded as a sledgehammer, but it's actually fairly complex and fairly nuanced.
Ahn has a PhD in economics and writes papers with titles like Distributional Impacts of a Local Living Wage Increase. In short, he's an unlikely guy to have written one of the go-to studies on NCLB, but he did. A few years ago, Ahn and his colleague, Jacob Vigdor, wondered, in spite of all the controversy, did No Child Left Behind actually do some good? Did it improve failing schools? So for answers, they studied the schools of North Carolina, though what they found can be applied just about anywhere. More on that in a minute. But first, I want you to meet Nancy Barber. In 2002, she was principal of a good school in Durham. She says the new law made lots of fellow principals and teachers nervous, thinking,
Oh no, in 4 years we're gonna, be restructuring, and, in six we could be closed down.
Schools were judged on something called adequate yearly progress. The goal was to get every child to grade level in reading and math by 2014. It was an impossible goal. But it was the law. It also required schools to break down their student data into lots of little subgroups, including race, disability, and socioeconomic status. Ahn says that was a game changer.
If one group of disadvantaged students underperformed, the entire school was considered underperforming.
Or, as Nancy Barber puts it,
your high flyers can't cover for your low flyers.
Hence the name No Child Left Behind. As a result, some schools that had long gotten high marks suddenly got red flags. And this is the first of two very important lessons Tom Ahn learned studying the law.
The ones that had the capacity to shape up, they did.
Ahn found many schools improved after that first warning with no sanctions at all, just the threat, because they had very few kids in need of improvement, and this is important, enough money and staff to focus on them. Ahn found a different story among schools where lots of students were struggling. For these, often poorer schools, the law was like quicksand. Donna Brown is director of federal program monitoring and support for North Carolina's public schools.
When I came to the department in 2004, there were 9 schools in the state that were identified for some level of improvement sanction. And by 2008-09, there were 521.
And she says that's nearly half of all schools in the state that received federal Title I dollars. After 2 years of failing to make progress, a school had to offer students the right to transfer to a better school. There's just one problem, says Brown.
Allowing kids to transfer to another school, you're not really doing anything to address the needs of that school.
In short, it was punishment, not panacea. So they sank into the quicksand.
Year 3, they have to offer tutoring.
With no help paying for it. Year 4, schools had to choose from a list of corrective actions.
Such as changing the length of the school day or changing something about the curriculum.
And now, the other great lesson of No Child Left Behind, says Tom Ahn, for schools stuck in the quicksand?
These sanctions start stacking up, and at the end of the day, they don't help the schools to improve.
That is, until the last, most feared sanction, something called restructuring.
When it occurs, it's basically a lobotomy.
After 5 years, schools still in need of improvement were supposed to write a restructuring plan that could include firing teachers, reopening as a charter, or even handing over control to the state. And in year six, they were supposed to do it. In North Carolina, Ahn says, the most common strategy was replacing the person at the top, the principal. That's what happened at Durham's beleaguered George Watt Elementary School when Principal Nancy Barber got the call asking her to leave her current school and lead a Watt makeover. Her first response was,
I think I'm good. You know, I'll just stay here and ride out my time. And then you quickly realize that this wasn't a call to ask you. This was a call letting you know that this was going to be happening.
So Barbara packed her things, and in October of 2003, she went to Watts. Less than a year later, she kicked off a radical reimagining of the school, helping transform it into a 2015 National Magnet School of Distinction. Watts' steady improvement tracks with what Tom Ahn found across North Carolina. The overall effect of restructuring on student performance was noteworthy, equivalent to
reducing class size by, let's say, a third to a half.
Across the entire school. Why? It's hard to know. One answer, Ahn says, is something that's true in every field. Good management matters.
There's something seriously wrong with the way the school has been run. And when leadership change occurs, basically there's a sea change.
And he saw it not only in student test scores, but also teacher surveys. After the turmoil of restructuring, staff morale often went up, not down. Who knew a lobotomy could bring so much good? Corey Turner, NPR News, Washington.